This is a lecture by L. Ron Hubbard given on the 29th of October, 1953. The title of this lecture is Study of the Particle Continued. This tape is 35 minutes long. Reproduced by Golden Era Productions. Please note, this tape begins abruptly, as did the original master recording.
Actually, Korzybski, this second part of this afternoon's lecture, actually, Korzybski is a tremendous study. There's no doubt about it. Any man who starts in on communication systems has got himself a terrific subject. And he can beat this subject to pieces in dozens of different ways. The only thing that I have to find with Korzybski's work, I make this point very pointedly, is every time I'm having trouble with a PC, recent years, I'm having trouble, some trouble with Korzybski. Because Korzybski made this rather fatal error. Instead of trying to merely codify communication, which in itself had not been done, it would have led him into everything. He tried something else. He tried a discipline restrictive therapy. And when this was applied, it put communication brakes on people's communication systems, which is the only place we fall foul of Korzybski, actually. Everywhere in Korzybski's work, we are in total agreement. There's nothing. Some of his work is, the old man should have worked a little harder and a little longer, actually. If he'd worked a little longer, he would have found a heck of a lot more answers. It's the only worthwhile piece of work done. If I'm kidding Korzybski, it's in a much broader, more interested spirit. For instance, I wouldn't even stoop to kid any one psychologist except William James. And he actually is quite interesting. They call psychology a science. It would be a science if William James had been able to codify it for communication. As far as I can find out, he's the only source for modern psychology. He wrote a book, very nice book. Did you ever see his book, 1898, I think it is, something like that. Very nice little book. If somebody had read that, they would have been in good shape too. All right, continuing on this study of the particle. There are an enormous number of therapies which you could employ, which would have to do with only communication systems or lines. Lines. If you've got a preclear that you just can't tolerate anymore, just start running lines on it. The genetic entity is entirely convinced that he is a particle on a line. He's a message going somewhere. He is the most convinced character you've ever heard of. So much so that the second you go into lines, the PC, quite normally, this is not unusual, I don't care where he is on the steps, will suddenly discover the line that the GE thinks he's traveling on through time. And we'll find this line leading back through the genetic line. Two uses the word line there. Right straight on back into graves, not his own as a Thetan, you see, but graves of grandpa and great-grandpa and back through time. And this line, as a line, has been going on. And it will show up as a slightly gold-colored, rather soft, expandable piece of stuff. Once in a while, somebody runs into this when they're starting to run past lives or something, and suddenly start to run out GE material madly, and then are able to prove convincingly and conclusively that I am my own grandpa. See? And that comes from processing a line. They get the idea. As a matter of fact, this statement is made in Book 1. It says, just for sake of illustration, with the limited communication facilities available there, says for, as an analogy, say, supposing we were on a railroad track which started someplace and went someplace in time, and people don't know why they're going where they're going, but they know they're on their way somewhere, and everybody kind of agrees that this is his feeling about it if he thinks it over for a while. Well, what are we going to do with this? We're going to find that any time the PC is a line, he is not source point, and he is not receipt point. So if he's not source point, he, of course, is unable to give himself commands, because he can only give himself commands if he can make postulates. And he can only receive commands adequately if he is at the receipt point of the line. And so we find people as out of communication as they are on or are the line, and as in communication as they are the terminals of the line. Therefore, lines on any level of case process with the greatest of ease. You can process them almost endlessly, but they sure process, and they sure are interesting, and they sure will spin a low-tone frequency. But there is a process that you could employ on it. You could have the fellow mark up a line. Now get the idea that there should be something on one end of it, and there should be something on the other end of it, and should be something on one end, should be something on the other end, should be something on... And what are you doing there? You're doing change of space processing, and actually just doing nothing but change of space processing between two marked up terminals. And you're prying him out of being a line. The only thing wrong with him, you might say, in regard to communication, is he is the message, not a giver and receiver of messages. And as long as he's the message. Did you ever see a letter write a letter? That's communication line. It's a letter writing a letter. A letter is the particle on this line, and he's got this, and he's sizzling down this line, and there he is. He is never going to try and get in communication with somebody driving a car while he's driving another car. He knows he's a particle, and he's on his way. So he's neither full or good source, and he's never full effect. In other words, he can't get good sensation. He can't get well and thoroughly betrayed. And he really can't well and thoroughly betray anybody. It's kind of a desperate situation to be in for a PC who's on the band where he has to destroy, and he really can't get to the point of command where he can issue the commands to destroy, and he can't quite get to the place where he could even be destroyed. See, I mean, having a rough time. Well, war does this to people automatically. Does it to them quite rapidly. The overt act motivator sequence is also discoverable in here. But a fellow puts a rifle to his shoulder and fires the rifle, and then he's at the other end, and he receives the bullet. Well, doggone it, it's just not, for some reason or other, in the basic plans of design, the body was not well constructed as a bulletproof vest. And it just doesn't work like a good bullet absorber. It just won't. You know that it'll take sometimes only one bullet, two bullets. Not efficient. No efficiency in it at all. And yet in war, people are expected to go out and put these bodies up as the recipient of a missile, which is above the tolerance level of that with which they're trying to receive it. So a soldier immediately starts going out of communication. Just across the boards goes out of communication with the society, with his family, with the army. Eventually, the army has got some kind of... You know, by the way ants run is very interesting. They're run by an entity set up, and the entity will run a lot of ants. You think of ants as individuals, and they're not individuals in the sense of the word. They haven't got anything in them. There's nothing in their heads. They're just being run. They're manipulated entities. Very interesting little machinery. They're being run very efficiently. And a soldier finally gets to a point where the general is the brain, and he's just sort of an automaton that gets put up and so on. You make a fellow who's been a private for years and years and years and making the command point, and a hell of a thing happens. He can't give any commands. Now we do something else. We get somebody who's been a corporal for a while. And the immediate thing he does is start looking around for the source of command. He got one. We make him a general. And he starts looking around for the source of command. And he just raises hell with himself. He look to his family or to God or to witchcraft or some other doggone thing. Here we had both Napoleon and Hitler. Neither one of them could issue a command that he knew was a command. To issue a command drove Hitler into a towering rage. He knew he couldn't issue a command, therefore he had to stop it before it started, which is anger. Stop it as it starts, or stop it before it starts, that's anger. So we got this, you see now? When the fellow is a particle on the line, he's always expecting a source. Now, why do people keep wanting God? Because they're a message on the line. They're not the start. They're not a day. They're not a day. People only really want God when they're almost to be. Why is this? Do you know, you take this little AD thing we've been using here, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, and we could actually mark it off exactly by the dynamics. We mark it off on the dynamics from A down. We mark it off. We measure off. It's 10 inches long, let's say. Just 10 inches long, this A to B inner line, which is the message line. And we mark it off in units of 10. All right, we've got the first unit of 10, or 1/10 of the line. We go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 in that first unit. And then we go on the next unit of 10, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. And we go on, theoretically, down until we got to the fifth unit, the end of the fifth unit. And then we would mark it off on inverted 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. And then re-inverted on the 6 to 7 unit, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. And then re-inverted on the 8 to 9, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. And then from 9 to 10, we needn't bother because that's that. You see how this line could look and what this communication unit could be. All right. People go around wanting to know what started them on the track. What is the reason why they are living? PC comes to you and asks you the reason why he's living. He tells you, the second he tells you, he says, I think of myself as a letter in a postbox. I think of myself as a marble rolling down the street, which has been sent by some small boy and which is liable to collide with another marble someplace or another, or maybe just the gutter. I don't know where I'm going. I didn't send me. Here I am. I don't know what's wrong with me. Well, here I am, a sort of a message, and I just got sent up to your doorstep, and I sort of fell over the doorstep. I had a dream last night that said I should come to you when they get real bad off, and they're down there about the 8th gradient. Last night I had a vision and told me that I should come to you and tell you that you were to help me. Help him what? You know, you get an immediate response if you say, help you to get where? Huh? You get an immediate response. He's a message. He's a Western Union telegram. He's a letter. He's a postcard. He's saying, having wonderful time, wish you were here. And he's carrying this arduously through trillions of years of space. And he hasn't anybody to deliver it to. Can you imagine the postman down here with a bag full of mail and so forth, not knowing where any of it went, but being forced to deliver it somewhere? Why do people keep pieces of paper? The first thing you, in diagnostically, it's very interesting. If the preclear opens his pockets and has, boy, they're really just stuffed with old pieces of paper, the like of which you never saw. Old envelopes, lady opens her purse and it's just jammed with old envelopes and old scraps of paper and old letters. I've seen people carry around in their purses as many as 50 letters. Terrific pack of letters. Just never get rid of them. They're a message going somewhere. People save scraps of paper. That's merely because in this society, messages are written on pieces of paper. See, they're the message. They're not source for anything, and they're not... Now, if you suddenly were to take this person might be very naive, might be very, very sweet, very innocent, and something or other, and if you were to suddenly hit them, they would be rather confused. They wouldn't quite know why they were being hit. Because, you see, they can't receive anything. So, it must be that you think you're hitting something else. Psychoanalysis. You see that? You slap this person who is a message, and this person cannot receive anything. So it must be that you're actually beating up Mama or Papa in your mind. You must have a misconception entirely as to what you're hitting. They will actually occasionally explain to you. One, they will very often explain to you if they don't want to hurt you. This character, no biceps, nothing, you know. And you cuff them or something, and then they will stand there
They look very, very confused.
And you say, now get to work or something. So they still stand there. They just don't. You'll find out, if you talk to them a little bit later, that they didn't want to hurt you. They never received it at all. See, they're more liable to receive than to hand out a message, but they can't receive a message. They can't receive a blow. And there you have anesthesia. People are actually locking themselves up so they can't receive these things. They know they can't receive these things, so actually they mustn't feel them if they hit them. See, if they get hit by something, then they couldn't have been hit by something because they're not a B. They're not a source. They're not a communication receipt point. And if they're not a communication receipt point, that must be your mistake, you dummy. And with this, you get into all of the completely silly, stupid lines of conversation which take place concerning arguments, quarrels, and so forth. If you understand this and appreciate this, look it over very carefully, all of a sudden those things become very comprehensible to you. The fellow can't receive communication. And all he's doing is explaining he can't, and he's explaining at the same time that he can't be the source of the communication, so all he does is explain to you consistently and continually that he didn't say that. So an argument consists of, is you didn't say that, and I didn't say that. And you've got the model argument. Which is the same argument as, I know you're not at A, and I know I'm not at B, because we're both particles. And the main part of arguments concern themselves with, we can't possibly be arguing. Because there's nothing to argue about, because we couldn't be in communication with each other, actually, because we're both particles.
This lecture is continued on side two of this cassette.
If you want to really set somebody back on his heels, just explain to him on that routine, but quietly, without the emotion. Because believe me, the emotion, communicating a word as a beam or something of the sort, is far more communicative any day of the week. Far more communicative than a word. Any time, as an energy slam, as a hammer and pound of energy, you see? Now, the particle, you could call this the particle theory of personality. Probably write a book about it. Particle theory of personality. This theory was originally developed. Where is he on this communication chain? Because he will behave proportional to where he is. You could make up the most beautiful communication system that would illustrate this. It would only be any good if it helped you with a case. Well, it happens that this really helps you with a case. You ask this guy to put up some anchor points. Then you ask him to receive some anchor points. And eventually, the significances of any significance merely has to do why I am a message. That is significance. Why I am a message. Why I am not source, why I'm not receipt point, why I am a message. You see, it's very simple. All right. Now, any time, any day that you can get somebody then to send and receive communication, and just neglect modus operandi to a large degree of exactly how he's doing it, but just steer him into some pattern or another that he will accept. Boy, we're really cooking in the process. Now, how would you do that? Sports will do it. Why is it you get somebody out operating in sports and so on? Well, there are sports that don't do it. Swimming doesn't do a thing for anybody's mind. Not a thing. Muscles don't develop in swimming. Other things happen that don't happen in swimming. A person gets very pliable. They get very limber when they swim. They get very easy to handle, too. But the game of catch is pretty good. See, why do people stand around and play catch just by the hour? Self-explanatory, back and forth. Well, now you, in an office, can do this. You can tell the child, instead of asking him to touch the room, He's making a room a receipt point. He knows it's not a receipt point, too, you see. He knows it's not a source point, not a receipt point. He knows it's not a source point because it couldn't be, because it must be on the line, too, because he's probably in the law. He's not responsible, is what it all comes out of. He's not responsible as long as nobody knows where he is, and after a while he loses himself. So you could have some kid come in, and you weren't able to do anything much with pictures or something of the sort, and you would take this little doll like this, and you would say, "Catch." That's it. What do you know? It's processing. Okay? Catch. Now, the funny part of it is he's probably, if he's in there seeing you, further down toward B than he is distant from A. So he's trying to prevent catching more than he is trying to prevent source. So if you were to give him a bunch of BBs and a BB gun and have him stand up and fire at a target for a long time, he'd probably feel wonderful. He'd just probably feel grand. He got it through. Or if you were to give him a deck of cards and have him put his hat on a chair and throw the cards into the hat. There's a very definite acceptance level there. How many cards can he get in the hat's game? He'll stand there and pitch cards into the hat and pitch cards into the hat and pitch cards into the hat. You're making him be a source point for particles. Now, another thing happens. There is a point of the case where an individual decides he's got to be a source point. This is the last ditch. He's at the wrong end of the line when he's doing this ordinarily. But he's got to be a source point, so therefore he's mocking himself up on a circuit bypass, which is going all the way from somewhere near B, but not at B, clear on around to A, and he eventually winds up kind of talking to himself, but he knows he's got to be the source point. Now, he can theoretically could shuttle himself around to that source point, but it requires that he be at B and then at A and then at B. So he gets a one-way flow. He is near B, but he's trying to be A, and he just keeps on doing this. He's near B, and he has to be at A. So he's got a circuit mocked up so that to reposition himself at A. And he's just got that circuit there, and he's just got that circuit, and he's just got to shift himself around where he can be up there at A. You've got to, somehow or another. And, of course, the more velocity, this is the horror of it, the more velocity he puts on the communications at A, insisting that he is at A, the more hit him at B. That's real grim. The more he's hit, anything he does will recoil on him. Why? Because he knows he's at B. But he knows he's got to be at A, but he knows damn well he's not at A. After a while, he starts to blame it all on God, and angels are talking to him and giving him the hot dope before he passes it along. Do you know one of the most maddening personalities to be up against? Is a fellow who realizes he's about to arrive at that horrible place, B, and has got every brake set, the emergency brake set, gravitrons set, skyhook set, grapnel set, and repulsors, charging full speed at B, and detractors and so forth, and you try to give this fellow something. He can't receive anything. B can't receive, and this is terrible. And that, to a large degree, was your parents. You come in with a stone, you come in with a word, you come in with some advice, you come in with a helping hand to push the car tire around to the back of the car after the tire's gone flat and so forth. Now, be careful of the tire. You've your own good free will have decided to put the tire away, you know, and help out, pick up the tools. And be careful of that and do this and do that and do something else. They can't receive it without jumping into source point. You catch? Typical. Little kids are the most desperate kids whose parents could take nothing. And they never realized this about their parents. Briefly realized this on acceptance level processing. Now, let's see. Mock up your parents and have them accept something. Just the thought of the parents accepting anything will sometimes blow off locks just by the tons. My parents accept something?
Oh, no.
Now, why is acceptance-level processing such an interesting process? It's trying to determine. It's trying to plow somebody out of that position which is close to be by permitting them to accept something. And one breaks that up by showing them somebody else will accept something, too. But if it just goes on for its own sake, on the hope that by some necromancy, something weird and terrible and wonderful is going to happen, it'll fail. Now, notably lacking and never mentioned in SOP 8 is source level. What is he willing to be the source of? It's never mentioned there. But of course, it goes along hand in glove at step 4. At step 4, the person is not getting there because he's so afraid of receiving something that he can't receive any good benefits from a process. So he will block all of these, and if you do processing, they go out and waste it. You know how they waste it? Just get the idea now. Of being processed up into beautiful condition, now go getting sick. That's wasting process. I get the idea of being of in beautiful condition and telling the auditor, didn't do you a bit of good. That's much less vicious. Somewhere the same thing. We're also talking about they waste energy. Determined that having a communication line is wasting energy. See? That's the way you'd waste it. And then having a messed line would be wasting actual communication lines. So anybody's using messed lines is actually wasting communication lines, but they're already there because the fellow has to waste energy. Isn't that wonderful? All right, you see a little plainer now what this communication source setup is. The first and foremost thing is for your pre-clear in this universe, space. First and foremost thing. Is he willing to be the source of no space? B is not necessarily, by the way, a condensed area of space, but he has begun to believe it is. Is he willing to be condensed space, or is he willing to condense space? And you have to get him out on the basis of, is he willing to make space? Now, it tells you that the closer one is to B, the more he is liable to condense space. And this is borne out in actual process. None of this material would be worth a nickel if it didn't get borne out in examples themselves. You'll find out the people who are shortest on space are the people who are in the 7th, 8th, and 9th gradients. So the people in the 9th gradient, as I've just drawn up this little line for you, they're really so short on space that they will get violently sick at their stomach sometimes when you ask them to mock up some. And I would say that would be that condition would be the beginning of the 10th gradient. The last grade. See, it's violently sick. Now, a good condition should be that a person who goes from A to B and back to A and can go to B and go to A and go to B and go to A. People get real sick if you start shifting positions in space. What's important about all this? Is the line important? Is that gradient I've been giving you so carefully important? No, it's only important so that you have a graph with which you can communicate. You can see something. And you can see this graph, you see you've got a communication standard, just like a tone scale chart. You can see this, you've got a communication standard. That makes for communication, because communication depends upon agreement to some degree. All right, if your pre-clear is sitting in a fixed attention position, or an unfixed attention position, follows that he's neither at A or B. Now, A and B are not absolute points, and we come right back to what I was talking about first, zero. The gradient scale of zero. Just to be very extreme, you could consider the whole universe a gradient scale of zero. If your pre-clear wants to see the whole universe, he enters it at a point so close to an absolute zero, when he's only looking at the messed universe with messed eyes, are you utterly astonished how close he is to an absolute zero, what there is to see? Gee. And as he goes up on the line, far from being only empty space, the amount of something in this universe is fantastic. It's almost jammed from anchor point to anchor point. It's crowded, and that's the main trouble. Because, of course, you see, it's only a concept of space. Now, the universe, this universe, is incapable of receiving anything. It's very close to a B universe. See? It can't receive, it mustn't receive anything. But boy, it'll certainly conserve energy. It'll sure save it. So one thing that's agreed upon on every hand is it's got to conserve energy. Your pre-clear is right in there pitching on that because it's so close to zero, so close to an absolute zero. All he could see of it, you see, is so close to an absolute zero, there's no abundance of anything. So he's got to be awful careful and everything's got to be saved. Now we go back upscale and we start looking and looking and looking, and by golly, there are more fascinating things to see than you ever heard of. Now, the one prohibition is they've got a reverse vector going in this universe, and that means simply that they say insanity is seeing things. That's not true. Insanity is not seeing things. Now, where is zero? Where is nothingness? Man, in his words themselves, is unable to define a nothingness without defining it in terms of something. So it's just a relative value. Things are motionless. Nothing itself is no thing. Nothing is defined as an absence of something. It's inconceivable, then, that there could be an existing state of actually, really nothing, not even an absence of a thing. See, the language, I just suddenly slam into the end of track on language. Limitation of viewpoint of the language itself is right there. Just try to express in mass language no thing.
That's the person to get a concept of his raw material.
And what's that? Nothing?
Right.
It doesn't work on me. I get the whole universe.
Right.
Oh, I thought you were asking for a concept of nothing.
Not necessarily. What's the whole universe?
Well, it's a thing.
Gradient scale of nothing.
So you look at this either way. And it'll come out the same way. But if you think there's an absolute something, you're in for a grave surprise. If you think there's an absolute nothing, you're again in for a grave surprise. Terrible. You're pretty clear being a message going from a thing to a thing through nothing. Of course, he's in for a grave surprise. Because he's no such thing. He's source and receipt point. Closer you can get him to these two points, the better off he's going to be. The more able and the more motion he's going to be able to go into. But don't think that motion is the end of theta. It isn't. Motionlessness is. Okay.